welcome to CYC Podcast Discussion on Child and Youth Care, episode number 132. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. As some of you know, I teach child and youth care full-time at a college in Toronto. Since I started a little over a decade ago now, I've seen increasing numbers of courses and programs around the world providing more and more online options to students. This raises a whole bunch of questions for me around what is teaching, what is relational teaching, what can and can't be taught online, if anything, and I wonder what factors are driving these shifts. To answer some of these questions, I've invited Graham McPheat, who has a tremendous amount of experience designing courses, teaching classes, and supervising students online. Graham McPheat is the head of learning and teaching in the School of Social Work and Social Policy at the University of Strathclyde in Scotland. He teaches in the Masters of Science in Child and Youth Care Studies, a program taught entirely through distance learning, aimed at child and youth care practitioners from around the world. Welcome, Graham, and thank you for joining me today.
Welcome, Wolfgang. Thank you for having me.
Oh, a pleasure. I'm excited about our conversation.
Me too.
Nice. Always a good way to start. Just in order to provide a little bit of context, in a couple minutes, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the MSc CYC program at Strathclyde.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as you said, Wolfgang, it's completely online, so there's no attendance requirements. It's a what we would refer to in the UK as a postgraduate qualification. So the expectation is that students will already have a first degree or equivalent qualification. And our programme is aimed at practitioners. So actually one of the requirements for students to come on the programme is not just the fact that they've got to have the prior qualification, they've got to be working in practice or in an appropriate related setting. And the aim is that their learning and education throughout the programme will be complementing their practice experience as they progress through the different modules. When we actually launched, we launched it as a two-year program, as a part-time program, because students are all in full-time employment. We have since revised that to have a three-year option, because what many students were experiencing is just the rate of progression and getting through 2 years. A lot of them were doing it, but they were flat on their back by the end of it in terms of just the workload and the intensity of that. So we've kind of backed off a bit in terms of the timeline. But essentially, students work through six. And this is where some of the terminology might be different to some of your Canadian listeners or North American listeners. We would talk about modules rather than classes. So students will work their way through six different modules, covering different aspects of child and youth care and practice before they move on to their dissertation. And they choose a research topic and carry that out and write that up as part of their dissertation.
And the research topic is tied to their workplace?
The majority of students do that, and that's what we recommend. I think that the important thing is that students pick a research topic that is going to be relevant for them. And because they're all practitioners, well, by and large, they tend to pick a topic that's going to be relevant for their workplace also. It's also helpful for students in terms of getting a bit of agency buy-in and support at that stage, because if they're doing research that there's going to be some organisational benefit for, then in terms of just a bit of support with, be it study time, resources, or kind of helping them to set up the research, then that's always in their best interest also. But certainly it's one of our aims in the programme that we're helping students to undertake research that is going to have a meaningful impact on practice, and it's going to have a meaningful and positive impact for the children and young people that they're working with. So the research should be very much rooted in their practice and their agencies.
I'm quite appreciative of your commitment to connecting it to practice, although certainly I don't think all research needs to be explicitly connected to practice. However, I think that that's something that sometimes in child and youth care we're like, oh, how is this relevant? So making that explicit, I think, is quite nice, and supporting people in the workplace. You know, too often schools require a level of commitment that is just not sustainable. So that's perhaps one of the reasons that online works, certainly the international component. I want to jump into one question really right off the bat, because it's the question that I struggle with the most, and it's a question that you've certainly identified to me as well. Can one really effectively teach child and youth care online?
I think it's the obvious question to start with, Wolfgang. And actually, if I mean, we're now in 2018. We are just about to take in our fifth cohort. We started in 2014, but if we go back to 2011, 2012, when we were first deliberating the idea of a distance learning course, that's the very question we were asking ourselves. Can we effectively do this online? And so just a little bit of background here at the University of Strathclyde, we have an MSc in Advanced Residential Childcare, and that's a traditional face-to-face course, but it has parallels with the CYC course. Again, it's aimed at practitioners, and it is people coming in from practice and engaging in education and learning and research that's going to be relevant for them and their organisations. So when we were thinking about launching this and asking that question to ourselves, like, can we teach this effectively online? I guess my starting point was, it feels like quite a big jump now looking back at it. I had no experience of teaching online at that point in time. There's a fine line between bravery and other things.
Fair enough.
So I started researching about online learning, and the first instance that was Strathclyde University is quite big, and there's various online courses in different schools and different disciplines. So speaking to different people, seeing how they were doing things, we have a teaching and learning online course here at Strathclyde for staff. I took that. I started reading and accessing material, etc. But possibly the tipping point for me was when I discovered Adobe Connect. And Adobe Connect is a piece of software that we use. It's effectively, it's a live classroom. Because my concern up until that point, well, not just my concern, I think all of our concerns here were, are we going to have something that is going to involve lots of forums and lots of reading, but we're not going to be doing this sort of, what me and you are doing just now, actually kind of communicating with each other in real time, being able to question each other in depth and have kind of real time conversations. And Adobe Connect, that online classroom, allows us to do everything that we would do in a face-to-face classroom. So we use the software, people log in their webcams so we can all see each other, we can talk to each other, we've got space to have PowerPoints, PDFs, videos, whatever the teaching materials are that week. And we've also got a chat bar going down the side so that, as well as the verbal conversations that are happening, that there can be sidebar written conversations happening. There's facility for students to put their hand up if they want to make a contribution. I can put a poll up on the screen and ask questions, and people can respond to it in real time. And I can split people into groups within the classroom. As we would do in a physical classroom, we might ask a question and kind of put them into groups at different tables, ask them to speak about it and feedback. Well, I can do exactly the same thing in the online classroom. So once we saw Adobe Connect and saw what that was capable of, and I probably should add at this point that I'm in no sort of commission here. I know there's other bits of software out there that do kind of similar things. We use Adobe Connect because it gives us all the things that we think we need. And that was a little bit of a tipping point for us in terms of that this is how we can replicate the real-time classroom interactions that are vital to teaching child and youth care practice.
Because so really what I'm hearing from you is that, so when we think of online, often, well, I'll speak for myself, I think of these you know, asynchronous, you know, typing somebody, you know, my teacher, or if I'm a teacher, you know, a student types something, I get back, you know, a couple days, few days later, and it's typing back and forth. But really what you're doing is creating a physical classroom that people enter through the camera rather than enter through their bodies.
That's it entirely, Wolfgang. Now, those other things that you describe, they still happen. Mm. We still have forums, and there'll be emails and different such things. And that's all part of the process also. But they're all complementing those weekly interactions in the classroom. And that is our classroom. And possibly actually the other thing that we can do, which I never mentioned as a real benefit, we can record all of that. The software allows us to record that and post that on the site. So what that means is students who can't attend, if they've got to miss class, well, they don't miss out on what happened in class, because they can access the recording and they can watch and listen to all that took place in the classroom. And actually for some students, even those that do attend, it can be a bit of a memoir aid in terms of if there's something that they can't quite remember that happened in the class, but they want to delve back into it, they can go back into the recording. So actually that recording function is something that we don't typically have in a physical face-to-face classroom. So there's actually some added benefits there that we wouldn't necessarily have in the class, in just a traditional classroom.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be quite attractive to me as an educator to have that available, to make that accessible to students, to prepare for myself, to hold myself accountable, to remember what was done in the classroom, to come back and to refocus on things that weren't quite didn't quite happen, or highlight things for students. That's nice. I want to ask. This is in the introduction. I mentioned that there are perhaps a variety of factors influencing post-secondary institutions towards online learning. And in Ontario, where I teach, we had a strike, a five-week strike, the longest strike we've ever had in the history of colleges in Ontario. Your own school has had strike work actions recently. Across the U.S., we've seen some really profound and tremendous changes out of teacher strikes and other work actions. I wonder, how much do you think economics are playing into this move towards online teaching environments?
I think it's definitely playing a part, although I wonder if sometimes some of the motivations are built on a myth, and that myth being that online learning is somehow easier and cheaper and second best. And actually, my experience of it is, if anything, it's more, as a teacher, as an educator, it's more resource intensive. And what by that I mean that if I'm teaching a face-to-face class, now, not that I would ever do this, Wolfgang, yourself, but I could prepare fairly last minute, and I could walk into the class and I could wing it to a certain extent, whereas in an online environment, when the way our course works, at 9 o'clock every Monday morning, all the material for that week becomes available, and everything has got to be organised and presented and professional. So all the links to the reading, to the, if we're using YouTube videos, TED Talks, the podcasts that we create, the voice embedded PowerPoints, etc. Everything has got to be there, fully organised, fully presented, and the forum's got to be set up with the quote, all the learning objects for that week. So you have got to be supremely organised to be teaching online. So there's a lot of upfront planning and upfront prep. Now, all good educators should be doing that, even if we're teaching face-to-face in the physical classroom. But when you've got 101 competing demands, then I'm not sure that everybody has always got the time to spend the ability to spend as much time as they might like to, whereas we can't get away with that in the online environment. So if going back to your question about economics, if part of the perception is that this is somehow kind of cheaper and easier and less resource intensive, then actually my experience is, it takes just as much, if not more, resource and time to create good online learning environments.
Hmm. So some of the things that you've identified so far is around the capacity to record things, the organization, students having everything up front, the requirements of the teacher to be prepared, which ultimately is more beneficial for the students. Are there other particular aspects of online teaching which you think present particular challenges or difficulties, and indeed other things that, well, let's start there. Are there other things that you might think present particular challenges or difficulties?
Certainly, I would say more challenges rather than necessarily difficulties. I think for our experience, in the first instance, we're just becoming comfortable with the setting and becoming comfortable with the different way in which we were interacting with students, and especially using the live sessions that I've described, using them to their greatest effectiveness. And so what we're doing now is that we quickly learned that if our weekly live sessions typically last 90 minutes, and if I'm going to get the most out of that session, I don't want to be lecturing the students, because if we're going to go to the trouble of getting students from different time zones all to log in at the same time in the classroom, they don't need to waste their time listening to me talking, lecturing for 30 minutes. So all those sorts of things, we operate effectively what a lot of the literature talks about, the kind of flipped classroom, mm-hmm. whereby, you know, we're giving the students up front on a weekly basis, here's the podcast, here's the readings, here's the videos. We want, when you come along to class, the expectation that you will have watched, you will have read, you will have listened to everything, you'll have read the forum questions, you will have made your posts, and we're going to use that 90 minutes to discuss your reactions, your thoughts, your questions that come up from the material this week, and we're going to get the students speaking to each other. So linking that back to your question about what are the challenges for the teachers, one of the big kind of learning points for us was about using those live sessions to their greatest effectiveness, and that was about front loading the student engagement with the material and setting a real clear expectation that when you come along to class, our expectation is that you're going to have access to all of this, you're going to have thought about it, you're going to have kind of thought about the kind of, you know, your reactions, your questions, and you bring all that to the class and you be prepared to share that. And so as teachers, we, and actually disciplining myself to sit quietly, to shut up and either encourage or in some instances kind of prod and prompt the students and kind of saying that we want your contributions, we don't want you coming in here and sitting quietly. Now, again, there's parallels to physical in the classroom teaching. The students who contribute a lot and the students who contribute little, and but often the challenge for teachers, how do we get those contributions from everyone? So I think that some of the skills that work in the physical classroom certainly work here as well, but there are some particular differences.
Mm-hmm. You raised some, for me, intriguing questions about the students and who would be a student more suited to an online environment. I'm somebody who very much enjoys the ritual of going to a classroom, sitting in a classroom, engaging in conversation in a classroom. I'm someone as a teacher who really enjoys that back and forth. And what I'm hearing is that you know, a lot of that can happen. Do you find that there are particular student profiles, and I'm thinking of listeners who are thinking, oh, maybe I'd be interested in this, that are more that adapt better or tend to be more successful in online versus other students who you might suggest, you know what, maybe the in-class option would be better for you?
I don't think I've noticed a pattern in terms of age or experience. And actually, I mean, what I found quite interesting, when we launched this, I naively assumed that everybody or the majority of students who would apply to come on a completely distance learning online program would all be quite IT savvy. Now, some of them are, but some of them are, at the start point, are absolutely not IT savvy. And some of the IT bit is a bit of a challenge for them. But they get there. And I think the most common characteristic in terms of determining the success and getting the most out of it is the students that are willing to embrace it and embrace it enthusiastically. And actually, that point that you just made there about students or teachers that enjoy the interactions in class and the relationships, and linking this back to about, you know, there's I'm glad to say, I don't know, that increased focus on the need to teach CYC in a relational manner. Well, our experience is in Adobe Connect, we can absolutely do that. So as the students come into the software for the classroom, and a bit like me and you did today, before the record button starts hitting, the class starts formally, the students are coming in, there's chats going on, and it's sort of, no, kind of, how are you this week? And if somebody's mentioned something last week about I'm going to be doing something or whatever, people are asking questions, there's chats happening in the chat bar. So all these things that would typically happen in a physical classroom, again, are happening in Adobe Connect. So the relationship bit is happening. And certainly the feedback that we get from students is that those that participate most in Adobe Connect, I actually think those are the students that get the most out of the learning experience, and they are forming real and meaningful relationships with each other, be it they're not necessarily meeting up physically, although there's lots of instances of kind of students that the relationship starts online, but then they do connect up physically once they get to know each other. And going back to the bit about, well, what students are most likely to succeed at, again, I probably just keep coming back to those that embrace it, those that want to come along to class and be an active participant in class. And in that sense, I don't see, my experience is there's nothing that much different with students who I teach physically in the classroom, because all the students I've ever taught in the classroom, they're all on the same spectrum in terms of participation. We've got some students who just, you can see, they absolutely love being there. They want to be involved and they are involved, where you've got others who are more of a wallflower and kind of listen to what's going on but don't participate in the same way. So we have that same range of students in an online environment as we do in a physical face-to-face classroom. And that kind of plays itself out, and just in the same way, it certainly to my experience, that kind of plays itself out in the same way.
Over the past few years, there's been a real shift in how young people experience their lives, and increasingly young people experience their lives in virtual and online spaces, be it video game, social media, phone, and this online CYC program, you know, when I first heard about it, I immediately went to, oh, it's a program to teach people how to be CYCs in the virtual realm, but that's not necessarily what you're doing. Yeah. Although I wonder, you know, because you are immersed so much in this virtual teaching space, are there I'm trying to get at a question here. I'm not quite sure how to formulate it, but I'm trying to get a question here around this move of young people into virtual spaces and CYC practice in virtual spaces, and how might we as CYCs address this, coming from your experience as a teacher in an online virtual space?
I think there is a connection. I think I would stop short of kind of being too grand in my claims about anything, but I think we do know that the way children and young people are living their lives now is changing quite dramatically in relation to technology. And as you say, that virtual space. And I think it's hugely important that we have a workforce that is able to engage with young people in that virtual space and to know what it's about and to some extent understand it and feel comfortable with it. And whilst the virtual space that our course occupies is perhaps different to the virtual space that many of the young people are occupying, and by that I mean that we are using, I've mentioned Adobe Connect, we use our Moodle platform at the university, we use emails, we'll use Skype sometimes for meetings. So perhaps the virtual spaces that young people are engaging in is different, but I still think there's a potential spin-off benefit for practitioners and organisations that just become more comfortable and more savvy with technology, virtual spaces, and having staff and CYC workers who've got some degree of comfort and familiarity with that. Because if we don't, then there's a gap, there's a kind of space there that we're not able to identify with, and I mean we know that CYC workers are always going to be older than the children and young people that they're working with, but I think we've got to work at not being too distant in terms of our understanding or our knowledge about the way they live their lives. But probably
I mean the idea of age becomes quite intriguing online, because of course nobody knows you're a dog on the internet, right? Nobody knows what age you are. Nobody knows who you are. So, does some of that, some of the barriers that we perceive around age, gender, race, do some of those collapse potentially in a virtual dynamic?
I think so, yeah. And certainly, they are thinking about, a lot of the apps or appliances that young people might be using, then a lot of the things that you've just identified there would be potentially hidden or anonymous in that sense. And so if we've got CYC workers who've got a degree of comfort, a degree of awareness with engaging in some of that, then I think that can only be a good thing in terms of having adults who are perhaps just that bit more able to appreciate and understand how young people exist. And I keep coming back to the paper by Carol Stewart and Kira Scarabaggi, and talking about how we think about life space now, and them identifying that virtual component of the life space, and for me that feels like a kind of fairly recent development, and it kind of illustrates well how we've got to think differently about the life space that children and young people occupy, how they live, and then by turn how we think about engaging with them.
Absolutely. As we end this conversation, Graham, I've known a variety of students who have gone through the program, and so I'm a little bit prejudiced towards the program, having heard things about it over years. If I had heard all bad things, I wouldn't have had you on the show.
that's just an old wolf gag.
What are students telling you? As a way to wrap this up, what sort of feedback do you get from students around both what works as well as maybe some of the challenges that they have? You talked about time and commitment.
And let's start with the positives. And I guess I've mentioned some of the positives about the I mentioned the positives about the Adobe Connect and those real-time interactions. In terms of an online part-time program, they certainly, a lot of students will identify the flexibility and the ability to organise their education round about their lives and their work. So that's a definite benefit. But in terms of the online component and the range of different students that we have, I think far and away one of the biggest benefits for the students is that we are, in any given cohort, we are pulling together a bunch of people who ordinarily wouldn't have the chance to get to know each other and wouldn't have the chance to interact with each other. And we've got people from different countries, from different settings, and from, whilst all our practitioners would class as coming from the kind of child and youth care community, it's the child and youth care community in its widest sense. So we've got students who are working in residential or group care, we've got students who are working in hospitals and kind of social work and education settings or in colleges and universities as well, and from a range of different countries. And certainly what the students are telling us there, one of the real benefits is the chance to hear from and learn from each other, and to be exposed to ideas, to ways of thinking, to practice examples that are just so different to them. And possibly the most striking example I would offer was in our first cohort of students, where we had a student, a David, who was one of our very first students in 2014, and graduated in 2016. And David worked for an NGO, and at the time he was studying with us. He was based in Rwanda, working in a refugee camp, working with children who had been separated from their parents due to genocide and civil war. And every time David spoke and offered examples, you could hear a pin drop literally amongst the other students and literally see them thinking, kind of, my goodness, just the practical examples and the challenges that he was talking about. But an easy interpretation of that is that everybody else was benefiting from David. But from speaking to David, he was quite clear that he thought this was a two-way street, because yes, he was offering very different, very challenging, and actually some of the examples are almost kind of quite harrowing examples that he was offering in terms of the experiences of some of the children and young people. But he equally appreciated hearing all the other students talk about what was going on, and a lot of the students in his cohort were Canadian and were from some of the from group care settings or hospitals or school settings. And David spoke quite clearly about him benefiting from hearing about their practice and what was going on there, and thinking about how he could pick parts of that and apply that to where he was. So I think there's an absolute undoubted benefit in online learning, our ability to hook students up, not just from different settings and not just from different parts of the country, but from different parts of the globe, working in hugely different contexts, and giving them the chance to think and learn and problem solve together. And I think that's an undoubted benefit of the online environment.
Indeed. Yeah, one of the things about CYC conferences, for example, or other conference, any conference for that matter, which is how you and I first met, is the ability to connect with people around the world. And certainly that doesn't happen on a weekly basis. But what you're describing, creating this international space for online learning on a weekly basis, absolutely.
And probably in that sense, it's just so in the first 4 years, now the majority of our students are from Canada and the UK, but we've had students from, David was from Rwanda, but we've had students from New Zealand, from Australia, from the United Arab Emirates, from Morocco. We've got a student in the first year cohort this year from Greenland. And all these different students bring that different context, bring different models of practice, different ways of thinking. And actually, linking it to one of your earlier questions about some of the challenges for teachers, in terms of getting kept on your toes, because not just the other students, but the educators, the teachers are getting exposed to ideas and thinking that are new to us also. So there's a real kind of, I think, kind of collaborative learning process going on, which isn't just about the students, but also the educators and teachers who are involved in that process.
Absolutely, absolutely. Graham, I want to thank you very much. I want to thank you for contributing to the education of CYCs. I know a variety of students who would not have been able to do a full-time master's program any other way. And as you say, you sort of frame it as a part-time, but there is that flexibility. And I also want to thank you for having this conversation with me today. I will post a link to Strathclyde on the CYC, www.cycpodcast.org. I'll post a link to Strathclyde for anybody who found this an enticing sales pitch, although that certainly wasn't our intention, but just in case people did, or they want to learn more about the program. Thank you very much for joining me today, Graham.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.